Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Briefing. I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Today is Wednesday, January 19th, and I'm joined by our Palestinian affairs reporter, Aaron Boxerman, and our military correspondent, Judah Ari Gross. Hello to you both.
Good morning, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
We have a lot to discuss, including the question of whether Big Brother is really watching us. But first, Aaron, there was a demolition in the much-discussed East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah last night. Tell us more what happened.
Yeah, so we were awoken at around 3:30 in the morning to reports that Jerusalem municipal bulldozers flanked by Israeli police had shown up at the house of a family, a Palestinian family, in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, the Salahiyah family. They showed up, they arrested some 18 Israelis and Palestinians on the scene, and they bulldozed the home, essentially. Now, Sheikh Jarrah, as has been much discussed, has been the site of repeated court battles and protests regarding evictions in the neighborhood. In many of the cases, the evictions have been by right-wing Jewish nationalists who essentially, through these complex eviction cases, move into homes that were previously occupied by Palestinians. This is a totally different case in that it's being conducted by the city, which wants to build a Palestinian special needs school and a few kindergartens on this site. The Salahiyah family has said that, you know, they've been unjustly evicted and, you know, they've tried to fight it out in the courts. And the issue turned into a standoff on Monday when the patriarch of the family stood on top of the roof of his home and essentially threatened to burn his house down with his family still inside it if the police came in and evicted.
Did this eviction catch you by surprise? I was surprised to wake up this morning and find it actually did happen.
To some extent, it is surprising because there's been a lot of political pressure, not just from sort of the usual suspects, you know, from European diplomats who have, you know, repeatedly expressed their concern about evictions in East Jerusalem, but also in the past, Hamas and other Palestinian factions have said that they would respond violently if Palestinians were evicted in East Jerusalem. So it is surprising in that sense. It's the first eviction in the neighborhood since 2017, albeit for slightly different reasons than the other evictions that we've seen. But at the same time, it makes a lot of sense. You know, in the dead of night, there are no diplomats taking photos and there are no journalists around to cover. The only people who were there besides the Palestinian residents were some left-wing Israeli activists. And at that point, the eviction was able to proceed, as the police like to say, without unusual incidents.
Judah, we're going to turn to you now. We have such a packed program. Thank you so much, Aaron, for that update. Judah, yesterday we saw all sorts of headlines about NSOware, the Pegasus program, and it just made me think of 1984. Is the government watching us at all moments through our phones?
So yesterday morning, the Financial Kalkalist newspaper reported that the police for years had been using a program called Pegasus without any permission or oversight from a judge to hack the phones of a number of Israeli citizens, many of them who are not, you know, actively suspected of a crime. This included protesters, an acting mayor, a number of people who are close to politicians, people who ordinarily, you would think the police would sort of tread lightly on invading their privacy. And they did so for years. And the protocol was that they would do this without a warrant, you know, without permission from a judge, collect information. And then if they found indications that a crime had been committed, they would then sort of retroactively request permission from a judge to get permission to look into their phones and then sort of get it in the official way.
Again, shades of 1984. I can't help but think of that.
Yeah. So the allegation was that this Pegasus software, which has come up repeatedly in the past few months, for it being used around the world by different governments to crack down on journalists, activists, political opponents, sort of you name it. And this is one of the first indications that the company NSO Group for years has been lying when it said that its program was never used against Israeli citizens, that in fact was not the case, that it has been. This is sort of a bit of a developing story. So just to quickly, the police have denied certain parts of the story, not all of it. The public security minister has initially completely denied certain aspects of the story and then walked that back a little bit. There have been a lot of carefully worded denials that leave a lot of holes for the things that are being alleged to have happened. But the issue with Pegasus and with similar programs, they go so far beyond what normal sort of wiretaps of just listening into a person's phone. These go a million miles beyond that, where this gives potentially the person using it, this gives them total and complete control over another person's phone, which means they can not only listen to your calls and read your text messages, they can also turn on your microphone and listen to conversations that are happening while your phone is in the room. They can turn on the camera and see things, which means that if this is being done sort of without proper oversight and without sort of clear-cut rules, it means that the police can be gathering information that's not only about criminal behavior, but just information that the police could use as leverage in investigations of non-criminal behavior, but maybe bad behavior or embarrassing behavior. We saw this during the Netanyahu trial, where one of the suspects claimed that the police threatened to expose an affair that he'd had in order to get him to cooperate. So this would potentially give the police, you know, information, direct information about an affair, or if somebody was in the closet that they were homosexual, you know, any number of things that a person might not want to get out, this would potentially give the police access to those things because it just gives them so much information about what the person is doing. I mean, just think about how much time you have your phone with you and where you have your phone with you and things like that. So the allegations are pretty severe. One of the things that's come out is the public security minister has said he's going to look into it. The police have denied sort of certain aspects of the story. Sort of one of the big claims is that this was like a practice. This was a policy that was in place in the police. And that's something that has been denied, but no one's really denying, no, it never, ever happened whatsoever. There are, you know, no one's denying that the police have used this Pegasus software, and the police are sort of publicly known to have a number of other sort of similar programs, like something called Celebrite, which also gives someone pretty much total access to a phone, or at least the contents of it. So this is very much a developing story. I mean, one of the things that's not surprising about it is, you know, these are Israeli-made programs that it's now well known that they've been sold around the world. It shouldn't come as such a huge surprise that it's being used at home as well. And this has a number of sort of privacy rights groups up in arms. And the state controller has also said he's going to investigate the claims as well. A number of politicians, you know, particularly on the left, but not only on the left, have raised some serious concerns about this. You know, there's talk about forming some kind of a state inquiry commission. If that's going to go forward or not is still very much up in the air. But these kinds of things are being discussed because this represents sort of a gross violation of citizens' privacy to a level that's really goes like people talk about, you know, the public security minister, when I was speaking to some of his people, would sort of say, oh, you know, wiretaps happen all the time. This is not a wiretap. Like, this is a million miles beyond a wiretap. And that's sort of part of the reason why people are very much up in arms over this.
Okay, thank you, Judah. We'll definitely update on the site. We are going to go to short break now.
Hey, it's Jessica Steinberg. If you have an important message you'd like to share with people who care deeply about Israel and the Jewish world, there's really no better way to do that than by advertising in our podcasts. Reach the Times Visual's unique community with an audio ad. For more information, email ads@timesofisrael.com. That's ads@timesofisrael.com.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him on, like, after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Aaron, you wrote a really in-depth feature about a curiously awful case of scavenger trash burning near Hebron that is allegedly, at least, causing rampant cancer among residents. Tell us a little bit more about this.
So in a strip of villages west of Hebron, Palestinian villages that lie along the Green Line, the 1967 ceasefire line separating Israel from the West Bank, a sort of curious trade has emerged, which is burning down Israeli electronic waste, Israeli scrap, to extract the valuable copper within and resell it back to Israel. Some people take it apart, they dismantle it cleanly, but other people simply burn this electronic waste. And the smoke and the smog generated by this burning, the burning that is so lucrative, that brings in millions of shekels into the local economy and that really elevates these villages economically above, you know, other similar peripheral rural Palestinian villages. This same burning is also lethal. I spoke to residents who told me they would point at houses and they would say, you know, that person's cousin had cancer. You know, that house had somebody who passed away last week. I mean, really, when you walk around these villages, you see that the pollution has had very dire effects. And again, as I said, the vast majority of this scrap comes from Israel. Israel generates about 130,000 tons of electronic waste every year. Some of it is recycled in Israel, but as experts told me, it really pays to pollute, and the easiest and cheapest place to pollute is simply to send it through Israeli checkpoints under the watchful eyes of Israeli soldiers and surveillance into the West Bank. Israeli companies, individuals, smugglers, they've all figured out that they can, you know, save money or turn a profit by selling or transferring their waste to Palestinians to dismantle it for them. And the price is borne primarily by Palestinians in terms of, you know, the health effects that are suffered by the people in these villages. But, you know, the security barrier that, you know, separates Israel from the West Bank doesn't block the smoke from drifting into Israel as well. And so when you meet Israelis in the Lachish region, which is on the other side, in towns like Shekef and Eliyab and Amatzia, they're very concerned about the future of their children as well. And they feel that it's only a matter of time until they're also affected. So, you know, I think in a normal situation, you know, there's an environmental ministry and, you know, there are police and they're supposed to crack down on this kind of thing. But, you know, Israel is many things, but it does not live in a normal situation. And as soon as you enter the West Bank, there are many different groups that are responsible: the Palestinian Authority, the Israeli military, Israeli civilian agencies. And I think one of the big takeaways from the story that I had was that, you know, when so many people are responsible and there's so many overlapping regimes, nobody's really responsible for taking care of Palestinians or Israelis. Unfortunately, you know, many efforts to solve this problem have yet to bear fruit. So for now, this toxic burning continues.
Okay, that's seriously grim, and I just can't let you guys go like that. There's a lot of talk in the media about snow happening tonight in Jerusalem. Now, my husband, who was born and bred a Jerusalemite, has always said that when they say maybe there will be snow, there is no snow. When they say definitely there's snow, there may be snow. Aaron, you live in Jerusalem. Are you preparing for the snow in any way?
I mean, I'm certainly preparing by staying inside all day as it rains and sleets outside my window. But I will say I'm very excited for the snow to happen. I have a neighbor who has a sled. We took it out last year and there was snow in Gan Sacher, and we had some very, very fun rides down the main hill in the park that's right down the street. And I know that if there's snow tonight, I'm going to be running down to try to grab a ride on the sled with him and probably everybody else on the street who also participated last year.
Judah, you live in the north. Is there any talk of snow about in your whereabouts?
No, absolutely not. But there's been a lot of rain, and we've had a few cases of hail, which is kind of close, but totally different. Unfortunately... you know, last month, my family was supposed to travel to the United States where we maybe would have seen some snow. But unfortunately, we'll probably have to wait until next winter for my kids to ever see snow in their lives.
And As a former North American who now lives in the desert, I have to say I'm the Grinch who stole snow. I would be happy never to see snow again in my entire life. But I wish everyone who loves snow well and good luck tonight. Thank you, both of you, for speaking with me.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.